Hello and welcome to the Ozone. I'm your host, Jeff Hazard, retired sports information director at SUNY Oneonta and also the chair of the Athletic Hall of Fame Committee. And joining me on today's show is Ron Tulloch, class of 1962, as we celebrate his induction that will be upcoming in June of this year, 2024, on June 8th, into our Athletic Hall of Fame. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Glad to be here, Jeff.
Certainly, class of 1962, we're now 60, about 62 years by the time you get inducted past your graduation, and
You got it.
you'll be our ranking senior member of this year's class. So congratulations.
Does that mean I go last?
As a matter of fact, the way I have the show laid out, you will be our final person that we'll celebrate, just because I want to connect, really the decades. You know what I mean? We've
Sure.
got some younger people that are being inducted, but I just thought that a lot of times with the veterans, I usually do like to put them, at the last in the show, just because I just like the stories, and so that we can connect what the campus was like, back when they went to school, and of course how it's changed,
All
when we
right.
talk to the younger ones. So,
You may
as a
have to
matter of
wait.
fact, yeah. So you will be our last inductee. So.
All right. I'll make sure my wife wakes me up.
Yeah. So again, you came to Oneonta in the late 50s, and certainly the campus was just starting to, pick up, and sports were being added. And why don't you tell us a little bit about how you found your way to Oneonta, and why did you choose Oneonta?
It was very fateful that I came to Oneonta.
Okay.
I graduated high school in 56, worked a year, and then was accepted at Hofstra College, not the university at the time, but Hofstra College.
Okay.
And my father was a building contractor, so I didn't want to spend time outside in the winter putting on sheathing and stuff like that. I always felt that I wanted to be an engineer, maybe a civil engineer.
Okay.
So that's was my intent at Hofstra. But money was tight. I was commuting 100 miles a day and working an 8-hour shift in a factory from 4 to 12 p.m. So the studies and the travel time and everything just didn't work out, and I wound up flunking out of Hofstra in 1958. So I went to work for Sears and Roebuck in Patchogue, Long Island. And one summer eve in August, one of the guys I was working with, and a little older than I was at the time, said, "Let's go out for a few beers." And we did. And he said to me, "Ron, where are you going to go to college next year?" Well, that hadn't entered my mind. I was still, fretting over not making it ho at Hofstra.
Right.
So I said to him, "I don't know." He said, "Well, I graduated from Oneonta. I can get you in."
Wow.
Oh, okay. His name was he's deceased, John Augustine. And he's my first real fate in this whole episode of going to Oneonta. So anyway, I got the paperwork from Oneonta. I filled it out, waiting and waiting. It's getting it towards the end of August. And finally I get a phone call, and like this is the Friday before Labor Day. And in those days, the school started, I think, either on Labor Day or the day after Labor Day. So I forget who it was, but said, "Can you come up here on tomorrow to meet with Mr. McVitie?"
Okay.
So I said, "Sure," not knowing even where Oneonta was at the time. My father and I get in the car like at 2 a.m. It's like a 7 or 8 hour drive, basically, from where we were in Long Island to get up there. And said, "Be here by noon on Saturday." So we're driving like a bat out of you know what, and We pull into Oneonta, and the gongs go off in Oneonta. It's high noon. This is like a Cinderella story almost. The gongs go off. I said, it's 12 o'clock. We don't know where the college is. How am I going to get there? We go up Maple Street. We find our way. I jump out of the car. I'm walking up the main walkway to this castle. And somebody's coming down the walkway. And I stopped them and I said, can you tell me where Mr. McVitie's office is? And he said to me, I'm McVitie. To me, that was an extremely fateful situation. So anyway, he takes me through, interviews me, takes me through the building, and we're in the back of the auditorium. And in those days, the soccer field was up, I guess, behind where the economics building is, or what the science building, the old science building behind Mark. So we're touring around, and all of a sudden I hear somebody yell out, "Hey, Lefty." Now, my nickname in high school and elementary school was Lefty because I'm left-handed. And it was a guy I went to elementary school with, Tony Piccioni. He says, "Hey, Ron, you go coming here?" I said, "Yeah, I guess so." "So you coming out for soccer?" "Yeah, I guess so." So McVitie takes me back to his office and says, "Be here tomorrow morning, or no, Monday morning, 9 o'clock." Now, this is 1958. Banks aren't open. Where am I going to get money from? So we went home, we got a few bucks together. And so Monday morning I leave and I come to Oneonta, meet Mr. McVitie. He takes me through the registration process. "Where am I going to live?" He says, "I got a spot for you out of town." So he finds a spot for me, and here I am in Oneonta. And that's my story about how I got there.
Okay, so you said that you met this elementary school classmate or whatever, and he's gotten you to try out for soccer.
Right.
So in high school, you were a two sport athlete, soccer and baseball at Oneonta. So were those the sports that everybody played, and were those the ones that you were involved in high school?
I never played organized soccer. Never. Baseball, yes. Baseball in high school. We didn't have any little leagues at that time. It was all pickup games and stuff like that. But I played a little bit in base 2 years of baseball at Port Jefferson High School, but no organized soccer whatsoever. Coincidentally, my father was from Scotland, Aberdeen, and he did play to some degree semi-pro football. But he taught me how to play cricket, not not soccer. So it was you just I don't know why I said I'd come out for soccer. I was athletic. I enjoyed running. And here was somebody that I knew that I could latch connect with. So by the way, he happened to turn out to become a professor at Brockport in English, and published about four poetry books. Yeah.
So you show up for practice. You never really played soccer before.
Right.
And so how did that go?
Well, that was an experience. First, I don't know if you have ever seen the footwear that we wore back in the late 50s and early 60s, but it was a calf length boot, about 2 inch cleats, square toe steel, like a steel square toe, and you would run up and down the field, with 10 more pounds just on your feet. But Hurley McLean was the coach, as you know. And most, not most, but I would say a good percentage, maybe 50% of the team at the time was a bit older. They weren't directly out of high school. Guys had been in the service and or other schools and things like that. So, as a group, we were pretty well mature. The game in those days, was just totally different. It was kick and run, kick and run. You never passed the ball back. You never did that. It was always square, square the ball, square the ball. And it was, you were either in a W formation. You had five linemen. I was a center forward inside for the 4 years that I played. But it was five up front, three halfbacks, two fullbacks, and a goalie. And we either played a W formation or a V formation. That was it. Kick and run, kick and run.
So again, I mean, in your 4 years, your teams had winning seasons every year. I mean, I think the winning percentage was almost 70% during that time. And you did have one season where where you didn't lose a game. You were 7-0-1, so an unbeaten season, which at the time was the first, the men's soccer program, which, I guess we could say it fit 1955 was the first recorded real season of soccer for the men. So that was pretty good to be part of the early years of a program that we now know has historically been very successful,
Yes, it
still
has.
to this day. So what did that feel like? I mean, certainly, you came in, you played all 4 years, you were a starter, and you never played before. And here you are, you've seen where the soccer program's come. I mean, do you feel a sense of pride that you were kind of in the beginning of it?
Oh, absolutely. To have guys like, I played with Laddie Decker, who was inducted in 1999. Nate Romano was the last year that I was there. He was there. And Lee Aldrich, of course, was there.
Just a
We
couple of
played
years
two or
ago.
three. We played 2 or 3 years together. And then, of course, after Mac left, then Garth came in. I think I was 1 or 2 years with Garth. But we had a lot of fun. It was interesting to watch how the skills improved, over those, even over those 4 years with the new guys coming in. It was a lot of fun.
I mean, because I know that, once Garth got there, who actually, played soccer, but really his sport was basketball.
Gee, I wonder why.
Well, yeah, I know he was only 6'10", right? 6'11". But I mean, the athletic director at the time asked him if he would be willing to take on the soccer team. And certainly we know what kind of a, I mean, he's a legend, obviously, at Oneonta and built the program and with the recruiting and the players. What was, again, you were just kind of at the beginning of Garth. I mean, was that what was it like? You were team captain, so obviously you communicated with him and got a chance to probably get to know him in those early years.
It's interesting. It just there was really, to my recollection, very little communication between the captain or the captains at the time and the coach. It was all team oriented. I guess the biggest responsibility that the captains had at the time were, before a game, you'd run out in the field and you'd do your exercises and you'd lead the exercises. That was it. There was I don't recall being in a huddle and talking about we got to score, we got to score, whatever. It was just a team effort. Let's get out there and do it. Not totally different than, in the past, I don't know how many, 30 or 40 years, where the captains have more, a little more responsibility, I guess.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, they're voted to be captains because their teammates feel and their coach feels that they can lead the team and kind of be that bridge to the coaches today, you know what I
Right.
mean? To make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And certainly we know that, you know, Coach Byrne, who's the coach now,
Right.
certainly has done an incredible job with that. I mean,
Yeah.
just during the time I was there and the captains we had during my time there, I mean,
Right.
some of the greatest players, you know, we've ever had. So,
I don't know. I don't know how the captains were determined at the time. Even with baseball, I don't recall. I just thought that it was the coach that decided who the captains would be. And for that reason, you know, I'm really very pleased with the coach McLean. He saw in me, I guess, some leadership qualities that I didn't see in myself at the time.
Right, which I think back then in that day, you know, obviously I wasn't alive myself, but just based on what I know from, you know, being around athletics, I think back in your day, I think that's what the coach did. I think they identified someone that they thought could be a leader and help the team. And
Right.
certainly in your case, you know, being a captain of both soccer and baseball, both coaches, sorry.
Right.
So,
Agree.
You had, you know, so soccer went great for your 4 years, and certainly in the springtime now it's time to trade it in for some, you know, a glove and a bat and a ball and the
Right.
sport that you really played. And you know, I mean, you had winning seasons again. Probably no coincidence. I mean, it sounds like just based on who I know you played with on a lot of those teams, it didn't
Right.
surprise me that you didn't lose many games. You know, plenty of Hall of Famers in there, both soccer and baseball. But you only got to play 3 years, you know, with the student teaching and, you know, graduating or whatever. But I mean, what was it like being able to, you know, that transition and being a part of the baseball program as well?
Well, as I said previously, you know, I played baseball, you know, since I was a little kid. And I enjoyed it, you know, very much. I always wanted to be a pitcher, being left-handed. You know, there weren't many pitchers around, but I you know, I really I didn't have the strength in the arm to really do that. I had one heck of a knuckleball curve, you know, that never developed. But I loved to run. I was pretty fast, so you know, the outfield position was the position I played mostly. And that first season with another Hall of Famer, Kramer Harrington, you
Kramer.
know, also a foundation board member, as I was prior to his coming onto the foundation board. I served for, I think, 6 years on the foundation board. We had a good team. They were, again, older, more mature individuals. And we had a lot of fun. And I'm sure you've heard the stories of playing in the old gym, and you know, imagine hitting baseballs in the old gym and trying to fend off the abutments. The
Old
air.
Main.
Oh gosh, what a job that was. And then by the time you got out, you know, it was like 32 degrees. You go down to Neiwa Park, 32 degrees, you know, the wind's blowing, there's snow in the air, and you're trying to hit baseballs and field and stuff like that. But we got through it, and finally, you know, at some point, probably since graduation at that point was in late June, the season probably ended maybe early June, and we finally got some warm weather, maybe 45 or 50 degrees. But you know, play up in Oswego and Cortland, the fog's rolling in off the lakes, and the outfield, you know, you could barely see home plate, but you're playing a doubleheader. You know, you're playing a doubleheader. So it was we had a good time. And it just coincidentally, one of my fraternity brothers, Jerry Honig, he wound up being co-captain of the baseball team after I was for a bit. So you know, it was a good time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And Certainly, like you said, Cramer Harrington and some of the names you've already mentioned are in our Hall of Fame for a reason. And it wasn't just because of what they did while they were at Oneonta, certainly beyond Oneonta, and serving on the foundation board such as you did, and all the extracurricular activities that you were involved in as a student on campus. I mean, how do you think that might have helped you in your growth and your connection to the college?
I think between and particularly with the collegiate group that I sang with, the double quartet for again 3.5 years, because that's the whole time I was there. It gave you or gave me an opportunity to develop some leadership qualities, and to be able to develop a level of maturity where I was sure of myself, or more sure of myself, and just working together as a team, whether it was in the assembly committee or the friendship committee, the collegians, baseball, soccer, or the fraternity, which I was president of but for 1 year. It just developed those skills in you. And I'm very appreciative for being able to do that and to have the opportunity through Oneonta and all its services and programs.
And so, you really carried that leadership with you into your professional life. And just based on the information that you sent in, that I can look at, it seems as though you were, you took that leadership and became a leader in the area of special education, which probably back in your time, probably nobody really understood or even heard of special education. And now it's just mainstream. It's like, part of the educational system itself. But, you had the opportunity again to be put in situations where you could, exert some leadership and develop policy and meet with people. Some of the things that you did are part of the national curriculum for special education. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and those development days? I mean, because you were really on the ground floor.
Oh, ab absolutely. So when I graduate, when I didn't graduate then, but when I finished the course of studies in January of 62, I wanted to be an elementary school teacher. Fifth to sixth grade would have been good. I was I did student teaching at Bugby, fifth grade level, and something like the older kids would be fine for me. So I looked in the newspaper for ads for jobs, and there was nothing there. And finally, my mother said to me, "Your seventh grade teacher, former seventh grade teacher, Miss Jack Fechter, is assistant superintendent for BOCES in Patchogue, BOCES number 2 on Long Island. He might have knowledge." So I contacted him, and he said, "Ron, I don't have any elementary school openings for you, but we do have a special ed opening coming up, in a couple of weeks. Lady's going on maternity leave. The teacher's going on maternity leave. Come on in. We'll do an interview." So I went in and wound up getting the job. Wound up being in a junior high school. At the time, it was the group that I was teaching. They were called educable mentally retarded at that time, because they had an IQ between 50 and 75. So I taught that class. Across the hall from me was another class, same age range, and a fellow who had been in the insurance business and decided to get out of that and go into teaching. So we were there for a couple of years, and I wound up coaching junior high JV soccer for Bayport Blue Point High School for a couple of years. And that was a lot of fun. That's where I really learned how to kick a ball using your instep, because I only had my sneakers on at that time, so I had to kick the ball. I couldn't kick it with the toe.
Oh,
But
geez.
anyway, so that's how I got started. And it was very advantageous for me because at the time, the state was providing, you had to get certifications, and the state was providing finances for you to get that. So I attended Hofstra College, not Adelphi College at the time, and Hofstra College. But coincidentally, remember I told you I flunked out of Hofstra? Well, I got my master's degree from Hofstra in 19, oh boy, 1968, and wound up teaching at Hofstra University in the special ed department. So, what goes around comes around, I guess, or something, whatever.
you showed them.
Yeah. So that was, but while I was, I spent 8.5 years at Patchogue Boces, and I was very fortunate because, as you said, it was just the beginning of special education, and it exploded when it was, at the time, was called brain damage, brain injury. Now it's learning disabilities primarily. But I was able to move through a variety of classes. Every year we the special education department was expanding in leaps and bounds. And even mid-year, we would move. I would go from junior high school to an elementary school learning disabilities classroom. And then 2 years later, I'd wind up in a high school program. So I was able to teach a large variety of disabilities and a large range of ages. So that was very influential. And then I decided along the way that I wanted to get into administration. Why? More money at the time. So I wound up applying for a job and getting a job as director of special education for Concord Carlisle, Massachusetts. In Concord Carlisle School District in Massachusetts, which was something I had always pointed towards when I wa knew I wanted to go into administration. So unfortunately, I was only there for 2 years because they did away with the job. But while I was there, I was able to also teach at a special education department for Northeastern University. So now I needed to look for another job in 1970. I wound up coming to Rockland County, New York, BOCES, and serving as a supervisor of special education there, and taught at LIU University in Rockland County on a part-time basis as well. Wound up being principal of a high school for 120 emotionally disturbed kids through BOCES. And I would say that the highlights of my professional career in special education was a couple things. When I was teaching the kids, there was a good age range of about 4 years and abilities ranges. So you had to individualize each for each student. And and then all of a sudden, 10 or 15 years later, now they're talking about individual IEPs and stuff like that. And I was doing that already. By the way, I was fortunate enough to work with a committee from Harvard while I was in Cornwall that eventually they wrote the beginnings of 94-142, Public Law 94-142, which became the Special Education Disabilities Act. So that was one thing. While I was in Rockland County, we did mainstreaming for the first time, where we were in self-contained classes. The classes were in regular school buildings, at some of them, at least the ones that I supervised. And I looked at these kids who were functioning pretty well, and saying, if we get these kids fixed up, they can go back to their classes. So I was able to work with beginning with one school, elementary school principal in Suffern, New York, Bob Drennan, who we would send a kid to a regular classroom for math or science, social studies, whatever it was. And that was the so we developed a mainstreaming program and began to return kids to their regular districts, saving them lots of money because it's costly to send kids to BOCES. When I got into the high school program, even when we had high school, when I had high school classes that are in regular public schools, I said to myself, you know, some of these kids are very athletic. They should be playing sports back in their home school district. So I was able to arrange with the principals of the high schools in Rockland County that the kids who were in special education could go back to their school district and play football, basketball, whatever sport it was. And then along the way, through efforts, I was able to introduce clinical psychologists into therapy, offering therapy to kids. Now, I think we were probably the first in the state to be able to offer that therapy to kids. And then finally, the big thing was I was able to negotiate with the high school principals such that the staff that I had would teach high school subjects, the kids would earn credit, and then they would be able to graduate from their local high schools, participate in all the ceremonies and stuff like that if they wanted to. So those areas were really the highlight of my career, I felt. So I retired in 95. I wound up a few months later helping out our local school district in Cornwall, New York, helping out the principal, being a substitute assistant principal, and becoming my wife's boss. I got a kick out of that. But while I was while since retirement, I mean, I worked at two other colleges and universities. So, and now we're just enjoying retirement.
Well, and to think it just started at little old Oneonta.
Yeah, absolutely. What a journey. I tell you, it's amazing.
Well, I mean, certainly, just in the amount of years it's spanned, and again, just your, we talk about people, when we induct them into our Hall of Fame, but I don't think we've inducted anyone into our Hall of Fame that was just great when they were at Oneonta. Every one of them
Sure.
has done something professionally that has also distinguished them. So it wasn't just about the sports and the games when they were at Oneonta. I mean, yes, we're
Right.
inducting them into an athletic hall of fame, but we know that all of you, just distinguished yourself professionally so that when when we talk about other things, there's this breadth of work, like yourself. I mean, that's pretty amazing and pretty, tremendous that you were able to take your Oneonta education and just kind of run with it. And like you said, every time you were able to be put in a position of leadership, you just felt that because of the confidence that you built at Oneonta and the fact that the coaches that you had while at Oneonta allowed
Right.
you to have that leadership position. So, I mean, it's just amazing that that's what I found. I mean, I've been around the Hall of Fame since the first year in 1999, and I don't think there was ever a person that we said, all they did was Oneonta there. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's so much more after graduating.
Absolutely.
So,
Yeah.
well, listen, I mean, is there anybody, as we kind of get towards the end here, I mean, is there anybody that you maybe like to single out and thank, for, maybe getting you through Oneonta?
Well, of course, I have to thank Mr. McVitie for delaying his exit from his office at 12 o'clock when I was supposed to be there and waiting a few more minutes so that I could intercept him coming down the walkway. I mean, what he did there and what taking me through the registration and finding me a place to stay. You know, I'm really appreciative of that. I have to, I also have to thank Mac, the coach, for taking this guy that never played soccer before, and elevating him to a starter for all 4 years, and a captain, a co-captain for a year. It just and then into baseball, a captain again. I wish he were alive so that I could see him and shake his hand, and as well as Mr. McVitie. But those two people really stand out as far as my thanking them for what they've done. I mean, there are players, that I've played with that, like Tony Piccioni. I mean, he was a fullback, and it just the other person I really have to thank is Esther Hubbard. I don't know if you ever knew her,
No.
but Esther was the director of this men's double quartet at Oneonta. In fact, she encouraged me to lead the fraternity that I belonged to, Delta Kappa. There used to be a Greek sing, and she encouraged me to lead the group in the song fest. And doggone it, we won the darn thing. We beat out the women, the sororities, and the other fraternity.
Wow.
So definitely, Esther Hubbard is high on the list of thanks from me for her guidance and her support for what occurred during the time I was there. It was great. I had a good time.
Well, we certainly, again, on behalf of the Hall of Fame committee, congratulations on your well-deserved honor. We certainly know of the history. And like I said, beyond Oneonta, you've made us proud in what you did and what you have accomplished as a professional. We love to see Oneonta in the news. We love to hear about people who, go on to great things, and you're
Sure.
certainly one of them. So, we'll see you on June 8th, 2024, when we will
Okay.
proudly induct you into our Athletic Hall of Fame.
I'm overwhelmed. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, and like I said, we will, celebrate all of our inductees, and it's going to be a great day.
It will be. I'll be glad to have my wife there, and at least my son and his wife as well.
Awesome.
Good. Thanks,
Well,
Jeff.
you're very welcome, and thank you again for joining us in the Ozone, and be sure to listen to all of our episodes on the Oneonta Athletic site, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Good day.
Bye.